Hello and welcome to Off the Shelf Reviews.
I could probably eat 26 Jaffa cakes in a row.
And I'm Gary, and today we're going to review and discuss The Relic, which released in 1997. Based on the novel by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child, with a screenplay by Amy Holden Jones, John Raffo, Rick Jaffa, and Amanda Silver, and directed by Peter Hyams. Ian, why don't you give us the synopsis?
Well, the story follows Tom Sizemore character, Lieutenant Vincent D'Agosta, who is a Chicago police officer investigating a spate of murders in the city. His investigation takes him to the local museum where he hooks up with Penelope Ann Miller's character, Margot Green, and the two of them start to investigate the murders together. But as the investigation deepens, they realize that not only are they dealing with a monster, but that the monster may actually be part human.
Join your mochas, gentlemen. Smell.
Take it outside, Martini.
Okay.
So I've been a big fan of this movie since its first release. Managed to catch it sort of early 2000s on a rental. Was very surprised by this film. And it's one of those films I always ask people, like, you like monster movies? Have you ever seen The Relic?
Yeah.
I didn't actually realize it was based on a novel.
No, neither did I.
And then come to discover that there's a whole series of novels that did not get movie adaptations.
Oh.
Well, this film also didn't even have the main character from those books in this film. So, The D'Agosta character, I think, was a hybrid of the Pendergrast character from the books.
Yeah.
Could have merged together to make this character, but
Like a chimera.
Oh, like a chimera. Yeah. But this film, it did okay. It had like a $60 million budget, and it made about $30 million on its opening weekend.
Nice.
So, it didn't really earn all of its money back overnight, but apparently, Peter Hyams was told, you know, the projections from the studio was that this film was going to do badly.
Yeah.
But he actually got a phone call saying, oh, we're surprised the film's doing five times better than we thought it would. Maybe it was because they reshot the ending or did an extra ending, which was needed to give the film a little send-off at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just if you've never seen this film before, you imagine, well, if you've seen a monster movie before, you know how usually they defeat the beast.
And yeah.
You can imagine what they had to do for this one. But yeah, big fan of this film.
I mix this one up with The Mimic as well.
A lot of people do.
Late 90s, like 1999, I remember seeing The Relic. I remember seeing, I always call it The Mimic, but it is just Mimic. And it was just that time where it was a, you know, crazy monster features were going on. You know, you had your Deep Rising and you had your Mimic and you had your Relic. And I got to give a shout out to Tom Sizemore. I'm a bit of a fan. Saving Private Ryan, Black Hawk Down, True Romance, and then this, where he actually gets the lead. Oh, I also forgot Heat as well. He's a badass in Heat.
Yes, yep.
You know, but this comes along, and then he's the lead investigative detective, you know, trying to work it out. And he's actually got, like, some depth to his character as well.
Well, I should think so, with the film having four writers and also being based on a book. Like, well, that is actually one of my problems with the film, is that I felt like it was a bit overwritten. We get introduced to D'Agosta's character, and like straight off the bat we find out that he's going through a divorce, that he's lost custody of the dog, and it becomes a recurring joke throughout the film that everywhere he goes, like, everyone knows about his current marital status and the ownership of his dog issues. So I was like, okay. But then again, I say it feels overwritten. It's kind of good that we have a character that is established quickly.
Yeah.
That makes him likable.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, we've got that opening sequence where we have John Whitney, who is like an explorer.
He's an anthropologist.
Yeah, we're not entirely sure where he is.
He's in Brazil.
Well, we're not entirely sure where he is at this point. We get told where he is, but here he is in the dark with these villagers. There's this kind of strange ritual going on. You know, they're going through something with these leaves, and then they kind of give him this cup of liquid, and he's just like, okay, yeah, I'll drink it. I'm like, that's a really bad plan, man.
Right? Well, maybe, yeah, I mean, he starts hallucinating, so it must have been some good stuff, because he's just like, Kahuluga!
Or Kathoga?
Kathoga, that's it.
And we find out that this village that he visits, this Kathoga is like the monster born from Satan, or, you know, Satan's pet beast or something, and they worship this creature. And so he wanted to get as much information as he could to send it back to the Chicago Museum that he works at so that they can put on this big expedition. But then as he gets the stuff sent to the ship, he then rushes to the ship and he starts kind of demanding that the captain removes his boxes. He doesn't explain why, but they just can't go to America. And so the captain's like, oh, but they're on board. They're already saved. Don't worry about it. And so Whitney kind of sneaks on board looking for his boxes and then realizes that actually he's come across the wrong boxes and his are still on the dock.
It's a great shot, isn't it? Where you see the boat taking off and you just see the boxes there. It cuts back to him. No! Yeah. Now, interestingly, the book is also set at the New York Museum.
Yeah, yeah.
And they wanted to film there as well.
Yeah.
But the museum turned around and went, you want to make a monster movie, a horror movie, a R-rated, 18-rated gory monster movie in our museum?
No.
So, anyone else? Chicago, like, yeah, pick us. So now we end up in Chicago, which, I don't know, it still works. Like,
yes.
I have to say the museum in this film is one of the stars of the film.
Totally.
It creates the atmosphere. It gives that spooky sense of wonder. You don't know what's in there,
yeah.
Yet alone what actually is in there. And so I just think it's a really, really cool setting. You don't see that often in horror movies.
Yeah, especially the fact that, like, once the museum shuts down, you know, and it's nighttime, it does get spooky. You know, you've got all these artifacts, you've got all these art pieces going on, but then you've just got, like, the random guards kind of going along. So it really sets the shadowy darkness, the pace of it. The thing is, you don't see the creature for an incredibly long time.
Well, the film cuts 6 weeks later as well, doesn't it? As the vessel turns up in Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
And D'Agusta's called to it because it's a crime scene, because it's a bit of a ghost ship.
Yeah.
Everyone on board is dead.
Now, I've got just a little bit of an issue with this, is that, so they go on board and they realize that there's nobody there, but there's blood and... You know, Vincent D'Agusta, he's very superstitious, so he's making sure that he's avoiding all these things that will bring him bad luck. And then him and his buddy are just like, huh, what's that smell? It smells really bad. Let's lift up this hatch and realize that underneath the hatch in this little water bilge are all the body parts of all the crew that they've been looking for. Now, were they killed, like... by the monster, and then the monster kind of just scooped the parts into the floor and then closed the lid to go, oh, I really hope nobody finds these parts.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a whole slew of questions here. I have now. Yeah. Did he kill all of these, like, 6 weeks later? Did he kill them 5 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago? Did he kill them that morning? when did he kill the guy piloting the boat? How did it dock without crashing? How did it get where it was going?
Man, it's lost where Jurassic Park all over again, isn't it?
Yeah. So I've got all these questions. I'm like, and on top of that, where is the monster? Where did it go?
Yeah.
Because, well, we'll find out. It got the museum. And I'm like, well, how did it get there without being spotted? How did it know to go there?
Well, we find out later there's some subterranean tunnels.
Yeah.
That where the boat was for a little bit just before it got caught. That's possibly where... the creature might have got off. But a week later after that, so we're now looking at 7 weeks, we then get to the museum, and that's when we're introduced to Penelope Ann Miller's character, Margot Green, who is she's not another anthropologist. She's an evolutionary kind of expert, and she likes to obviously study where animals evolve and the history of them and all this kind of stuff. But she's kind of on edge at the moment because she's attempting to try to get a really expensive grant from some, you know, investors to keep her crew going. And you've got Chi Mu Lo, who plays Greg Lee, who is also trying to sneak the grant from behind her. Now, what I think is incredibly funny, and I only read this up when I was wikipediaing the film, that Greg and Margot have worked together before, but in a school.
Okay.
Because it turns
out... Was it the one where there was a cop pretending to be a teacher?
Yes, there was.
Yeah, it was a kindergarten cop.
Because we've also got Linda Hunt playing Anne Cuthbert, who is a great actress, and she's like the custodian or the overall boss for the museum. And she herself worked with Penelope Ann Miller and Greg Lee's actor in Kindergarten Cop. And so you're just like, oh, so teaching didn't work out for you then, did it?
No. Well, we also find James Whitmore. So we find out that, I guess, life after Shawshank wasn't too bad on him after all.
He pretended to hang himself, but no, he's now working for the museum. And they are investigating the fact that they haven't heard from John Whitney for 7 to 8 weeks at this moment. They knew he'd gone down to somewhere in Brazil and that he was going to talk to the or speak to these villagers, and he was going to supposedly send back these Kathoga kind of monuments. But instead, all they've ended up with are these boxes that are filled with packing leaves with these strange little orange kind of things on them, on the leaves. Now, you're not entirely sure what they are at first, but as Margot's character starts to kind of experiment on them or investigate them, she realizes that they're like a weird steroid.
It's like a fungus.
Like a fungus thing that, once ingested by certain creatures, they will mutate. And you do see like a little bug kind of sneak into the box. And then later on, you see this bug come out and it's fucking humongous.
I mean, you've just mentioned that moment. I don't know whether it was just me, but the sound effect of that bug, that beetle emerging, it sounded like a xenomorph.
Yeah, it did.
And I was like, well, we've got Stan Winston involved, we've got Galen Hurd involved. And there's many a moments throughout this film that I'm like, that reminds me of Jurassic Park. That reminds me of Aliens. Yeah. It kept happening, like, so much so that I was not surprised to find out that a lot of people went, this is Jurassic Park meets Aliens in a museum. And I'm like, we're all right. We are all right. We're all on the same wavelength. It's great. But that's to be said, the first sort of hour and a half of this film, first hour.
Yeah.
It feels like a detective movie.
Yeah, it does.
Because we are following DeGusta, who's now turned up at the museum, because the security guard, you might recognize this guy, also from said previous movie, Jurassic Park.
Oh, really?
I mean, this guy was the guy who was, he's taking a break in this film from shipping velociraptors around.
Whoa, really?
He was the guy who dies right at the beginning. But, I mean, he didn't die, clearly, and so he's now on a smoke break. And he's smoking a little doobie, and, well, you're in a horror movie, and, well, it's not going to work out too well for you.
No.
We do find his severed head and his brain and blood all over the place. And
man, I forgot how gory this movie is.
It's pretty gory, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. It's surprising to see a big studio spend out on gore. And it's like, well, you know it's going to look pretty good.
Yeah.
And I mean, when you see Stan Winston's name pop up in the opening credits, you can just relax, can't you? You just be like, at least there's going to be something good.
Yeah. I mean, I've always loved, obviously, Stan Winston's work. And I think that's what kind of maybe pushes this movie just a few more elevations above your standard, bog standard monster movie, is that even though you don't get to see the creature a lot, when you do get to see it, particularly the practical prosthetic effects, it's amazing. You know, some of the eye effects look really well, some of the claw effects really well. You kind of wish that you see some more of the monster in motion, but if you have any experience with practical prosthetic effects, it sometimes just can't do what you want it to do. So then you've got to kind of mix it up with some CGI. But as Gary said, the first hour is just following Tom Sizemore's character investigating these spate of murders, because you get the security guard, he gets killed, and then you've got two kids that get lost in the museum after dark, and they start hearing some strange noises. And so he's wanting to shut the museum down because he's pretty certain that there's a mass murdering psychopath running around there, cutting out people's brains and stealing bits. But Linda Hunt's character, Anne Cuthbert, is kind of like the mayor from Jaws, where she's just like, no, we've got to keep the museum open. We've got these really rich people coming and we
need
the money.
The mayor's coming, and so is his wife.
Yeah, and so DeGusta is kind of like Brody's character, like, okay, fine, okay, we'll do half and half. I'll make sure to check the offices and check the corridors, but then we're going to have to investigate, obviously, the tunnels and everything underneath to see if there's anybody hiding.
I was going to say, we do catch up with two police officers that are wandering around.
Yes.
And they end up just firing at this guy that just opens this tent flap. They just blow him away. And then they're like, oh, it turns out that he is a convicted murderer and rapist and serial killer. And, oh, it's phew that we got him. Oh. So there's no more monster. It was just this homeless guy.
Those two cops, I think, are really well written and developed in this movie. I don't even know their names. I mean, I'm sure I could have wikied them and found out who they are and the actors and all that kind of stuff. But the fact that we only briefly see them fight this kind of, you know, homeless man here.
He's got an axe.
Oh, yeah. And the guy who's the head of the security for the museum is like, oh, well, that must be the guy. Yeah, yeah, he's already dead. But then these two cops will turn up multiple times later on when all the major action takes off. And they're actually kind of pinnacle at one point. They're like, hey, man, are you going to stay behind? Yeah. Do you need some extra ammo? You take care of yourself. And I'm like, oh, buddy, cop drama.
So, I mean, that's how I feel about the film being overwritten. Because it's noticeable. It's not seamless. Noticeable, though. So, but it still works.
Yeah.
But that's what's, like, this film's weird charm about it. But yeah, it's good. Now, always interesting, because you mentioned Mimic earlier, and I remember, you know, always reminded of Mimic with this film as well. And yeah. I was just like, now, which one is it? Is it Mimic or The Relic where the two kids die? And I was like, watching this one, I was like, no, I'm pretty sure it's Relic where the two kids die. And then you see them outside very briefly as the pastor's walking in. I was like, oh, no, they survived. And then they talk about what they saw. And so I was like, so it must have been Mimic where the kids died.
Yeah. Mimic, those things kill freaking everybody. In Relic, it turns out that the creature is attempting to eat people's parts of people's brains. I think it's the oblongata or I don't know brain surgery, but it's a gland that kind of replicates like adrenaline or steroids or something. And it the creature needs to eat that part of the brain to keep itself going, or it will die.
That's right. It sort of regulates its hormones by consuming, I think it's the
hypothalamus part of the brain. Yeah, sorry.
And so they find this connection between all the severed heads on the barge.
Yes.
Now the security guard as well. And so they're trying to figure out what's doing this. And they're like, probably wasn't that guy with the axe in the basement. Yeah. Probably wasn't him. And so DeGust is trying to tell everyone, like, no, I think we've still got something down here.
Yeah.
But then he also gets the phone call from his chief as well. He's like, here's the mayor. And the mayor's like, so I hear there's a gala. There's a party at the museum tonight. Oh, it's really great that you'll be keeping everyone safe tonight.
Yeah.
Thanks, goodbye. It's like, oh, well, we know the mayor's going to pay for that one.
I think it's good as well that, I mean, Penelope Ann Miller, I've seen her in a few things. I mean, nothing majorly massive. Kindergarten Cop. I kind of like her in The Shadow, you know, where she plays another character called Margot too. But where it feels kind of like Tom Sizemore should be the hero who kind of works everything out, she's actually the science behind everything, where he's literally just the brute force. And so at some point, she kind of jockeys for main lead as well, because she starts to investigate, you know, the packing leaves that John Whitney's had sent to his office, because his office gets absolutely trashed and they can't explain it why. You know, she starts to investigate these things on the leaves, and that's where obviously she comes across the bug and has to kill it with a book. And when she starts to do a kind of autopsy or like a cut up of the bug, she realizes that it's 33% reptile
and part gecko and part something else.
And so that's where she starts to uncover that the bug ingested these things off the leaf, and then that has kind of forced it to go through this kind of hybrid chimeric kind of mutation where it becomes something new. So then, taking that into account, some of the investigation that they've seen in concerning this creature, that they're still not entirely sure, because they still haven't, nobody survived to see it in one and go, oh yeah, this is what it looks like. Most of the times they end up dead. But she starts to uncover, and she even gets a little bit of its blood and puts that into her machine and starts to uncover, right, it's got 33% gecko, 33% insect, it's got something else in there, and it also may be partly human.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the big reveal at the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
That John Whitney is the creature, which is so We know that something happened to him at the very beginning of the film.
Yeah.
Then we know, obviously, he's disappeared. So where has he gone? Well, you know, odds are he's probably the monster. Yeah. So we imagine he was on the barge, got to Chicago, then got to the museum, trashed his office looking for whatever was supposed to have been sent there, which was, you know, the package.
So was he still human when he was on board the boat?
It was. I mean, this is where I'm like, there's a whole other film here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like John Carpenter's The Thing and Cronenberg's The Fly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where he's undergoing this transformation.
Yeah.
And then he's still eating and feeding off the people on the barge as over this journey. And so, yeah, I imagine he was still mostly human. And then without getting the sustenance he needed, he transformed
into this creature. And when the gala itself, I mean, because this is the big moment, the gala happens. And Greg's a bit of a dick, and he explains to the security guys, oh, yeah, no, that's fine. You can lock down different areas of the museum. We don't have to go there. Even though that locks out Margot's and Albert's characters in a separate part of the museum.
We've got DeGusta and his friend agent. They're sort of down in the sewers.
Yeah.
And they're down there with the guard dogs as well, the sniffer dogs, yeah. Trying to track down the thing. And, well, one of the dogs go running. One of the dogs ends up being horribly mauled and then thrown back at them.
Yeah.
Which then sends one of the cops off on a rage as he goes chasing for the creature.
Yeah.
And then DeGusta eventually catches up with the dog. Well, we also had this wonderful shot with the dog kind of just cowering and whimpering as the beast is in front of it.
Yeah.
But DeGusta eventually finds that dog. And there's a happy reunion there.
It is.
But that security guard, the police officer, his severed-headed remains gets dropped through the window
into
the gala after we've had this blood dropping on this lady.
Yeah.
And all hell breaks loose.
5, 6, 7, the whole board's going down. Code 27? It says we're having an earthquake.
Man, this bit at the end, I mean, it's really just surprising how well this part is done, where all hell breaks loose. All of the rich people are just rushing out of the exhibit. They end up getting to the doors and smashing through the doors.
Well, this is the bit that reminds me of Aliens, where you've got the two security guards are like, oh, they cut the power. I don't know. You go and check the power. And he's looking at the monitors, and the monitors go static, and then the lights blink out.
Yeah.
Then they get the red lights as well.
Yeah.
And he wanders back into his room. He's like, hey, buddy, okay. Oh, God, your head's fallen off.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
The creature's just like, I'm going to kill you now and take out all the security.
But the creature was just in the gala, and now then it was in the sewers, and then it's in there with them, and I'm like, wait a minute, this creature is teleporting. Is there more than one of them?
No,
it certainly feels like that.
It's just really, really fast. It could be part cheetah.
Well, it's definitely cheating because it's jumping all over the place. Yeah. So I'm like, where's? I mean, it probably knows its way around the museum. It used to work here.
That is true. I mean, how much of John's mind is really in the creature?
But he's consumed by the addiction and desire to consume the brain. So
yeah, and is he filled up with the fact that he has all this power now that he can seem because he's pretty much invincible.
Yeah, well, in the book it explains like his skin is pretty much bulletproof. It's so thick that nothing can penetrate it. And so yeah, it's literally adapted. Yeah, it's part. I mean, we'll go into some of the specifics now, but it was Mark McCreary who designed the creature. He penciled it.
Yeah.
And then it was the director who just went, I like that design. That went to Stan Winston, who then built three of these. One was the sort of the hero one, the one for all the close-ups. That
nice.
Looks good.
Yeah, yeah.
And two more were the, the stunt suits, the practical ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then one giant head as well for the close-ups.
Nice.
But this was one hell of a design. And it obviously was designed. It is a puppet suit. There is a dude in that suit.
Oh, wow.
And it was, granted, he had to be on a harness as well to help support him.
Yeah.
Like, there was all sorts of arms and extensions inside. But, you know, McCreary, who designed it, has gone on to say, like, the people that had to wear it and were in there said it was the worst experience of their lives.
Really?
And he said he's taken those painful lessons of creature design, along with Stan Winston, going forward to make sure they don't ever inflict that kind of pain on actors that have to wear monster suits ever again.
I mean, did he not watch Invaders from Mars and see what the fuck they did with those goddamn suits?
Right. But the design itself is spectacular. And it's different, again, from the book. But it's kind of got an alligator's body or scales mixed with that of a horse or a lion.
A lion, it's got mandibles.
That's
on
right.
The front
I think the front head looks more like a spider.
Yeah, it looks like it's got multiple eyes.
That's right, and so it just looks intimidating and frightening. However, the reason why we're seeing it so late in the movie, it was because for the most part, it wasn't quite ready yet. Yeah. They had to keep waiting. When the film was due out in 1996, it got delayed till 1997 because, well, they were running behind on the monster.
Nice.
But when you do get to see it, mostly it's in shadows, but during this sequence where it terrorizes these people, it's ripping this guy's head off.
Yeah. You
know, the SWAT team coming in.
The SWAT team, oh man.
That one guy gets pinned down, he's being decapitated. Yeah. I love the shot where it jumps off the guy on the rope and lands with him. And then you've got the last guy dangling there going, pull me up!
Pull me up! And then they pull him up and they realize he's got no legs. Help me! Help!
I wonder why it got easier all of a sudden.
I mean, I question at that point why the creature didn't try to just escape and run havoc. You know, if it needs to eat all these people's oblongatas or brain bars or hypothalamuses, you know, it could just run riot around the city if it's pretty much invincible. But with the lack of, you know, practical effect magic on screen, you know, they needed to contain it in these little few action sequences. And so at the same time, while the creature is running around ripping apart the SWAT team and killing Greg and trying to attack the mayor, the Gusto has worked his way back through the museum, come across Margot and Albert Frock, and he sent his partner off, hasn't he? He's told his partner to go.
He's evacuating those from the main event down through the sewers while the others stayed there and, well, got killed.
That's it. You need to get them down into the sewers. There's a flooded area, but you should be able to walk through, get up over the other side, because the museum as well has gone into a massive huge security lockdown, so the cops outside are trying to cut their way through. And Albert Frock kind of realizes he can't go very far because he's in a wheelchair, and so he asks Margot to just leave him in this one area while she goes off to help DeGusto try to defeat the creature. And then the creature actually turns up, and there's this moment where Frock is looking at the creature, and there's kind of like a bit of a recognition.
Yeah.
You know, like the creature knows him. It may not fully remember from where, but it certainly just has a look with him. And then later on, we come back, the whole cage has been ripped apart and he's fucking dead. You got a feel for Penelope Ann Miller's character. Twice in this movie, she just happens to inadvertently walk upon a dead person's corpse and freak her goddamn head off.
Well, how did she manage to walk into that first crime scene now? There was like 10 cops outside.
I know.
They just let her through.
And the thing is, she even says, well, later on, it'd be better if you just close the door. I'm like, it's a men's bathroom. Wait, did you not think about not going in there?
Where is his head?
It's over there by the sink.
Lieutenant DeGusto. My God!
Get her out of here.
No. The partner starts to take the last few survivors down into the basement, and as they're going around, I like the water is like waist high.
Yeah.
And so the creature is able to submerge itself in this water and then kill one of the cops and a woman as well. And while it even the partner, DeGusto's partner, is just like, look, while it's eating them, let's get over here.
Yeah. And also, I mean, sadly, we also lose Greg Lee, who goes wandering off sadly. I mean, yeah, he was set up as an antagonist, you know, he was the sleazy guy who wants all of the funding so he can have all of his projects, doesn't care about anybody else.
But yeah.
Apparently, I mean, he also survives in the books, he carries on, as well as Dr. Albert Frock, he also survives in the novel as well.
I mean, they needed to up the body count for the movie.
It's true. So Margot comes up with the idea, based on some of the research that she's done about the creature's DNA, that it'd probably be susceptible to the cold.
Yes.
So she comes up with a plan to track it down and then freeze it. And it doesn't really work.
No, it does.
So then she decides that, after some more research, that it's probably going to be after the fungus that was on the leaf. So they sort of bait it and trap it, try to anyway. And but the creature is a little bit smarter than that.
Yeah, it doesn't fall for that trick either.
No, it doesn't. No.
And so it chases Margot into her, like, work area.
That's just been sealed off because Augusta was trying to keep her safe, and now he's basically locked himself out.
But I also love the fact that there was a part at the beginning where she was walking to Augusta around her area, you know, and showing her what they do in this part of the museum. And he's looking at this one area and he's like, oh, this is a whole lot of flammable equipment here. And she's like, oh, yeah. And he's like, better not light a match. And I'm like...
Foreshadowing. Yeah, you know?
And so then when he's being locked out, when D'Agosto is being locked away from Margot now kind of takes upon the Ripley.
The final girl kind of thing.
The final girl kind of moment where she's being chased by the creature. And it's my only major gripe with this movie is that the kind of adrenaline chase moments that Margot has to go through with the creature, it's brought on by computer generated imagery. It's CGI. And it's very noticeable. I mean, it was even noticeable to me back in 99. You know, 98, 99, when I first watched it, I was like, that doesn't look good there. It looks superimposed. It looks like it's not... Like, the effect of it running through the doors as it's chasing her looks cool.
Honestly, when I saw this on TV, on VHS, I couldn't tell CGI at the time. It was seamless. And of course, the film was really, really dark.
Yeah.
But the fact that the film's now on DVD and now on Blu-ray, and now they've, you know, the pictures are much cleaner.
Mm.
It's not, there's not so much film grain or anything. So I think now it's really noticeable.
Yeah.
But I also think that for the CGI for late 90s, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's not horrible. I'm not saying it's the worst. What I'm saying is that especially when she starts coating it with the liquid, I mean, because she just starts smashing
the moment it's on fire.
And then the moment it's on fire.
Yeah, that's not holding up at all well.
Yeah, when it's on fire, it's not great. But for late 90s, you know, pre-Matrix... It's not bad. You could see what they were trying, and I suppose if I'm trying to compare it to the practical effects that I've seen, that the fire effects on the CGI creature doesn't hold up.
Now, I think it was because it was also the bit that I mentioned earlier in the video, that it was kind of rushed and added at the end.
Yes.
Because original test audiences didn't like the ending. So they were like, well, we need to blow the creature up at the end for a big hurrah.
Yeah.
So that's why I feel like maybe it didn't look right, because they had to rush it.
I mean, what was the original ending? Do we know? Did it kill everybody?
I don't know.
I mean, that would have been cool. But yeah, Margot gets the creature to chase her, and then she jumps in this huge... tank of liquid water thing that had been explained earlier in the movie, but I'd completely forgotten. And the creature's trying to get her, but then the room just absolutely explodes.
The slowest fireball ever in the background. I mean, the creature's moving four times faster than the explosion, but that's behind it, but it's fine.
Like, it could have just ran down into the sewers and jumped in some water. I'm sure it would have survived for a little while, but
then
Augustus
sent flying backwards as well, isn't he? And,
yeah.
But he gets to open up the lid, and they both have that smile at each other.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, you know what? I'm kind of glad that the film didn't, like, force in, like, a let's become lovers during the course of the movie. They have a little smile at the end, which suggests that maybe they'll talk after the film.
Yeah, they might share a coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah, but also, it wasn't forced in. So I kind of like that. But, I mean, there was a moment worth talking about, though, before the creature explodes.
Yeah.
Is when it pins her into a corner, essentially, and she's waiting for the elevator, a bit like Aliens.
Oh, yes, yes,
and,
yes.
And the creature stops right in front of her, and again, they have that look of recognition. And then the creature gets a little bit personal.
Yeah, it wanted to lick her.
And I'm like, what was the two of them's relationship before he went off to Brazil?
Yeah, maybe they had kind of relations.
I don't know.
He was so wrapped up in his work. The movie doesn't explain it.
It doesn't know, but it definitely had a moment there.
Yeah, definitely.
And again, I just think the creature head is fantastic, but the CGI tongue, not so much. But I would still say it's a very satisfying ending to the film. And I think what I like is that it kind of plays it straight. It's not cheesy.
No.
It's not a cheesy monster movie.
I mean, I also like the bit where, like you said, the mayor had told D'Agosto on the phone, the gala's going ahead and we're going to be happy that you're here. And so then later on when everything's kicking off, it's D'Agosto's turn to call the mayor and be like, you listen to me. I'm telling you right now what we're doing. You're going to follow my partner and he's going to get you out. And so after that, when the mayor has gotten out, the police chief's like, "You wait until I get hold of DeGusta. I'm gonna,
gonna be back in a cop car in no time."
Yeah, he's gonna, rue the day he crossed me. And the mayor's just like, "No, you will not. You know, he got us out. You're gonna leave him alone." And so by the end of the movie, I'm actually really satisfied. The creature's dead. DeGusta might or might not have a thing with Margo. Nobody's holding it against him, and the people of Chicago will never know that this creature was running around.
And Linda Hunt probably changed her career now into fashion, I'd imagine.
Yes. So
in the museum business, probably not working out too much.
She might fly off to a desert planet somewhere.
It's true. Ian, what were your favourite scenes from The Relic?
Well, I've got to go with the easy stuff, which is kind of all the gore effects. You know, like I said, you don't really see the creature in a lot of the kills, but it works for this movie. It's shocking. You know, the fact that when you see the guard sat on the toilet smoking a joint, and then all of a sudden this hand comes underneath the stall and pulls him underneath. I'm like, the creature kind of leaned down and go, "Oh yeah, there he is. I'm going to grab him." Could it smell him? Could it hear him? Who knows? I mean, the SWAT team attack is just absolutely, memorable. Just watching them. It reminds me of Alligator, when the alligator swung around and it's attacking all those people. Goddamn love that movie. But that guy being pulled up, he's missing his legs. As I said, the only gripe I have is that CGI bit at the end. But I've had all this fun leading up to that, just watching it kill people left and right. I do like Tom Sizemore, some of the sequences that he has, like the penny. Whenever I see a coin on the floor, I kind of stop for a moment remembering what he says. And then I remember what Margo says, where she's like, "Every penny counts. And so I'll take that money." Those are some of my just fun ones.
Yeah. I mean, I think the creature is fantastic. I love the Cthulhu. I think its design is great. I think it looks great in the film, the way that it moves, the way that it's animated, the practical and the CGI. I do like it. I mean, it's a bit obvious in CGI in parts, but I still do like the design.
Yeah.
One of my favorite laugh out loud moments in this film, though, was during the lockdown sequence when I'm past my shock of remembering aliens. It's when all the security doors are going down and the other cop just grabs this wooden chair and he slides across the water to get to the door, and the door just smashes through his chair and he's just like, "Ah." it was such a heroic moment. It was just so much of an epic fail. But I was kind of glad that guy made it out there. I actually really enjoyed that entire sequence when the police officer body gets dropped down in the pandemonium in the carnage. I mean, I think more people do more harm to themselves than we see the monster do to them throughout the whole movie. The whole scale of everything was really, really cool.
Yeah.
I also really liked the sequence in the tunnels with the sniffer dogs trying to track down the creature. I thought that was pretty effective. I liked the lighting. The cinematography is good. Now, I will complain about the lighting, that the film is a little bit too dark.
Yeah.
Now, granted, today the film looks a lot better than I remember, which is good. But there's still a lot of... I mean, there's like 3 or 4 shots in daylight in the entire film. And the rest is in these sewers where the lights are out.
Yeah.
But even when scenes that don't need to be dark just feel unnecessarily dark. Maybe it's to keep the film tonally the same.
But it
is distracting. It's noticeable. It's not Alien versus Predator Requiem levels, but it's noticeable.
Yeah.
Worth mentioning. And if I was going to go with one last favorite scene, it's going to be that security guard that gets his legs bitten off screen and they pull up his torso. I think that reveal is great. And the actor as well, his expression sells it. Like, you see him alive and he is just gone.
He's just gone.
It's a great, great moment in the film.
Yeah.
Ian, do you recommend The Relic?
I do. I mean, I do love revisiting this movie every now and again. I think it's just a classic creature feature. And I mean, I might be putting my head on the block here, but I think in about 10, maybe 15 years time, when people look back at this movie, it'll be remembered fondly like we do with classic 50s and 60s monster movies from back then, like The Fly or The Blob and things like that. People are like, "Oh, how is that scary?" And then you sit down, you've got your popcorn, you've got it dark, and the movie just kind of sucks you in. Yeah, unfortunately, you don't see the creature a lot, but it does work in this movie's favor, just like it does with Jaws, that when the creature does appear, you're like, oh, fuck, put it away, you know? You've got plenty of gore and plenty of body parts. The film doesn't seem to shy away from just going, hey, look, this is what it did. Do you like that? Right, wait until the creature turns up in 45 to 50 minutes, you know? There's not too much major character development with the main leads, but there's just enough to kind of just make you relate a little bit to them. Like with Tom Sizemore's character, he's very superstitious, he's going through some shit, and so he needs this win. You know, he needs to, you know, solve this crime so that he can get back on top, and so his ex-wife will be like, oh, you bastard, you're famous now. Penelope Ann Miller, yeah, she's not the greatest actress, but she sells this kind of scientist, evolutionary expert just enough that she fills in the gaps for Tom Sizemore's character, so that by the end, the two of them are like, hey, we need to do this to kill the creature. Let's do it. And it works. Love it.
Oh, yeah. I'm also going to be recommending The Relic. This one is definitely worth a watch. It's a well above average creature feature with good performances, good effects, and memorable horror moments. Tom Sizemore and Penelope Ann Miller were both great. They're very likable and they're easy to root for, along with a strong support cast, including Linda Hunt and James Whitmore. The creature itself is worth watching for, though it's only in it for about 4 minutes of the 100-minute runtime. But when you do see it, it's mostly obscured in shadow and sometimes in aging CGI. But other than that, it's great. It's a really hideous design with lots of cool details that make it stand out. The on-screen kills were also brutal, fairly gory in parts, and there's a fair few scenes of great carnage. My biggest complaint about the film, as I've said, is the lighting. You know, it was intentional by the cinematographer-director to light it looking as natural as possible with lots of shadow, and it's effective. But so much of the picture is lost in blackness and it's hard to see. Even well-lit areas remain mostly in darkness. The music by John Debney was all right. You know, it didn't stand out,
yeah,
but it didn't distract either. So it was serviceable, except when it kind of gave the nostalgia of, again, watching Aliens or Jurassic Park, which the film was very likely influenced from. So, yeah, I think the film is worth a watch. I enjoy this one. I think it's one of the great monster creature features that holds up well. I think a cult classic, if I do dare say.
Oh, yes.
The next... Evolution in Terror. Thanks for watching Off the Shelf Reviews.